Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perreault, and it is Wednesday, so that means it is time for our weekly house call with Dr. Lena Lee, the Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Dr. Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
And today with us as well, we have Andrew Dunn, who is a Senior Public Health Inspector. Andrew, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's a pleasure.
Today, we are talking about bats. Dr. Lee, I'll ask you right off the top, why is public health concerned about bats?
Yeah, so the big thing that I think most people know about is rabies, but there are a few other things that bats have the potential to carry. So one is histoplasmosis, which is a fungus, and both rabies and histoplasmosis can affect humans and animals. For our household pets, there is also the risk of bats carrying distemper and mange, which don't affect humans, but certainly are something that we're aware of for our pets. We do know that about 3% of bats carry the rabies virus, so it's not the majority of bats by any means. 3% is a small number, but it's still substantial enough that we're always on the lookout and on guard for bats that may have rabies. Now, rabies is a disease that's caused by a virus. That virus attacks the central nervous system, so it goes up the nerves from where you have exposure, oftentimes from a bite. And then when it reaches the brain, it causes the symptoms of rabies, which oftentimes are fatal, almost universally fatal, unfortunately. The rabies virus is found in the saliva of affected animals, and that's why the bites are the source of concern for us. So for bats, the most common signs of rabies are them not being able to fly, or you see a bat resting in an unusual place. So for example, on the ground or the floor, whereas they prefer to be perched. On the other hand, histoplasmosis is a fungus. It grows in the soil, and it gets contaminated with bird or bat droppings. So then exposure to that contaminated soil and that fungus happens when you disturb the soil. So oftentimes, for example, if you're doing yard work, if histoplasmosis gets into the lungs, it can be fatal or cause severe disease. So it is also something that we are aware that bats carry. And the key thing to do there is if you're cleaning areas where there's known to be bat droppings, or if you're in areas where bats have come, and even if you don't see bat droppings, you're cleaning that area, make sure to wear a mask and gloves and keeping dust to a minimum. So not using sprays, but using wipes instead. And it's really important to remember that bats oftentimes, when they get into the home, They don't have either rabies or histoplasmosis or anything else. They really are healthy and just looking for a place to be able to leave the home. And sometimes they get into the house and get confused and can't quite leave. So really, most of the bats that we encounter are not going to be a risk for disease transmission.
And that's something that, you know, we really wanted to make sure that people know. You're not preaching hysteria or anything like that, but like, we've talked about this with other animals too. And we've talked about rabies, for example, you know, any animal. Could be a squirrel, could be, you know, a fox, could be anything that's out there. Could be a neighborhood dog, could be a stray cat, you know, any of these animals do carry that risk. How many rabies cases do you see?
So rabies cases in Canada are counted in the single digits, at least in sort of the post-rabies vaccine period. Rabies cases in humans are very, very rare. They always make it into the news because it's so unusual. We do see rabies among animals. In household pets, it's also very rare. Occasionally, we see it in household pets from animals that were recently brought in from other countries. Because, for example, for dogs, rabies can be more common in wild dogs in other countries compared to here. We do know that, for example, there is rabies in raccoons and foxes in Ontario, as well as we've been mentioning bats. But again, it's not the majority, right? Like, it's a small minority of these animals. And that's why we have all these conversations about rabies. This is why we give the rabies vaccine to humans in our region, because we know there is rabies in our region, but very rarely in humans.
Okay. Now, before we get to Andrew, Doctor, one more quick question for you. Why are we more likely to encounter bats at this time of year? I think I know the answer, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. So bats are usually born in June, and then they're not usually nesting because the young are able to fly quite early. And so within a couple of weeks, they're flying and getting their own food. And then the young bats sometimes do not have as much experience in knowing which places to avoid. They, you know, may not have encountered the inside of a home before or know what a house is, and that they shouldn't be going into it. And oftentimes as well, bats, attics are so like the upper level of the attic of a home, are oftentimes really good spots for nursery colonies for bats. And so sometimes people have bats in their attic, and they may or may not know about it. And so if you have bats in and around your region, they may be in the places where you live, then they may end up just in your house. Oftentimes during the day, they roost in trees, sometimes in buildings or under buildings, and they do hibernate oftentimes in the winter months as well. Some of them prefer to hibernate in attics of buildings as well. And so you may find in the winter, people find that in their house, in their attic, they're getting bats. They are nocturnal animals. They are most active for feeding about 2 or 3 after sunset. And so they actually eat a lot of the bugs that and insects that we find to be annoyances, and those bugs and insects being in our communities and in and around our houses is what leads them to be in our region as well.
My wife finds them cute, by the way. She loves bats.
They're very, very cute.
They are very cute.
I agree. Yeah,
absolutely. And we shouldn't be afraid of them. Andrew, what should we know about these bat encounters? And I'm very happy to bring you into the conversation now, sir. Welcome back. So what should we know about these encounters?
I'm with you on the cuteness thing. I often go out. I live in a clearing in the woods, and if you go out just after dusk, when the sky's there's still enough light in the sky, and maybe people have never done this, but you look up and you can see the bats flitting around. Some people might think they're birds, but if you look closely, they're little bats. But anyway, as far as your question goes, there really is a difference between two words we're using, an encounter and an exposure. We're more interested in the exposure side of things. And when we use the word exposure, we're thinking about a close exposure where we or a person could have been exposed to the saliva of a bat. And as Dr. Lee had mentioned, it's the saliva that carries the rabies virus. Quite often we get calls and people encounter bats, that is, they're in their home and they have a bat flying around, but they're awake and they know the bat's there, and we can rule out that there's been an exposure. Where we sometimes run into questions is during sleeping hours, when people are in their homes and they wake up to find out that a bat's been flying around while they're sleeping. We would define an exposure as any time a bat has actually had contact with a person. That could include landing on, handling without gloves, landing on somebody's clothing, landing on a bed while you're sleeping. Those are things that we would consider as exposures. Obviously, being directly bitten by a bat would be the most obvious. So that's what we would call an exposure. Exposure could also be being exposed to the saliva of a bat through a mucous membrane, eyes, ears, mouth, through a wound. Probably the most obvious would be a an actual contact with the bite with a bat, as opposed to through a mucous membrane. So we get lots of calls, and essentially we do a risk assessment. And what we try to rule out, or what we try to determine, is what the degree of exposure is. So like I said, if you're in your home and there's a bat flying around and you're awake, you're pretty much sure that there's been no exposure per se. Where someone wakes up in the night and there's a bat flying around, if it's healthy, if it's pretty sure it hasn't landed on you, or if it's not in sleeping space, probably not an exposure. If it's a child's room, children sometimes can't communicate to us as well what's happened. In those cases, if you can't 100% rule out the possibility of an exposure, that is a bat having landed on you at some point. If you can't rule that out, that's where we recommend folks going to seek some medical opinion, or they can call the health unit, and we try to help people work through the potential exposure. In those cases, that's where people may be recommended to receive the what we call the post-exposure prophylaxis or vaccination.
Dr. Lee, when we look at these bat encounters, I mean, we can pretty much sum up in some quick actions. We know that, like, if there's a fire, call 911, and along those lines, we know what to do in certain emergency situations. Maybe you could give us sort of a rundown if you do have contact with a bat. What do you do?
Yeah, so like Andrew mentioned, you do need to go seek medical attention. And that would be the assessment. Someone will talk you through what exposure you might have had. And then oftentimes, actually, the ERs and the physicians in our area and other clinicians, they know to contact us here at the health unit, and we'll talk it through with them as well. Alternatively, you can call us. So our number, 1-800-660-5853, if you've been bitten. And that happens in all hours of the day. So we do have an on-call system as well. These sorts of encounters, it is best to act on an exposure fairly quickly, so within the day, and not wait, because although it does take some time for rabies to actually to come up through the nerves or the wound to become symptomatic, that time can be variable, usually ranging from weeks to months, and so we want to act on that as quickly as possible. The rabies prophylaxis, if you do need it, is a series of vaccines, so it's not just a one shot, but is anywhere between, depending on the specific circumstances, between 2 to 4 shots, sometimes 5. So all of that is a conversation with a healthcare provider who will give you the specific recommendations for you.
Andrew, we just have a few minutes left here. Maybe you could give us some advice as to how we can reduce the risk of having bats enter our homes.
Yeah, if you've typically older housing stock where, the periphery of the building has some cracks, crevices, things like that, where bats can get in and out. It's one thing getting them into the attic space. It's another thing getting them into the actual living space. So if people are noticing on a regular basis having bats get into their living space, it's really recommended that they seek some professional assistance, either through, can be pest control, but there are wildlife specialist companies out there who specialize in bat-proofing homes. Old chimneys, unused chimneys, siding, other places you might not even think of where bats can get in and out of the home. It really takes a professional eye to sometimes figure that out. But if you are experiencing it, then it's totally worth getting someone to check it out. We used to have bats in our house all the time growing up, and they came down an old chimney. It was just, my dad had an old fishing net behind my mom's piano, and he used it on a regular basis. If I only knew the things I knew now,
for sure.
But But like I said, there are companies out there that specialize in bat proofing homes.
And what about your pets? That's something that we touched on that a little bit. Maybe you can just give us a quick summary on that, sir.
Well, pets in general, we never know what our pets might be exposed to out there when they're out in the backyard, and bats is one of them. But to protect our pets against all forms of wildlife, including bats, get them regularly and routinely vaccinated with the rabies virus. Always a good time to check to see if they're up to date, and contact your veterinarian to get them up to date. It's very important to keep your pets vaccinated against rabies. Protects both them and because we spend so much time with our pets, it ultimately protects us as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I can tell you just quickly, you mentioned growing up with the pets and so on. With the bats coming into your home, that's something that my wife experienced growing up in the country. We did have a bat come into our home. We live in Smiths Falls. I'm born and raised city guy. You know, I'm trying to get over that hump and be a rural country boy, you know, but I live in Smiths Falls. So anyway, the bat comes into the house. She knew exactly what to do. On went the oven mitts and so on. And she knew exactly how to grab it and take it out. But of course, here's her husband freaking out. And I tried to throw a comforter over top of her hands holding the bat, because I had heard that if it's covered, then it's easier to get it out. I threw the comforter over the bat and my wife, which did not go over very well, as I'm sure you can imagine. She almost fell down the stairs and so on. So the bat removal from our house, you know, definitely lies with my wife. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. But she was calm. She knew what to do. And she thinks they're just adorable. So there's that.
And that brings up a good point. If you do have a bat in your house and there has been no exposure, it's just there. You can try to remove it. Best to try to remove it without handling it. If you can open a window or a door and have it try to fly out by itself is great. If you can't do that, definitely use something that is going to protect you from being bitten, such as a pair of good leather work gloves. Bats have very, very tiny needle-like teeth, they sometimes hard to tell whether that's one of the concerns, is hard to tell if you have been bitten. You always want to protect yourself before handling bats, any wildlife, to be honest.
And that's what she did. You know, she did make sure that she was covered up, and she put on her winter coat as well, just to give her that extra little. But again, for her, it was something that she had done dozens of times too. Me, not so much anyway. So Andrew, just quickly, if somebody would like to get some more information on this, what's the best way for them to do so?
They can always go to our health unit website, which is www.healthunit.org. So healthunit.org. On there, you can go to our services tab at the top. We have many, many services, but rabies is one of them. And once you go into rabies, you can either read about rabies in general, or there is a bats and rabies tab as well.
And doctors,
information there, and there's links to some other useful sites.
Sorry to interrupt. And Dr. Lee,
that's okay.
Once again, we're not preaching hysteria here. This is hysteria. This is information that everybody should know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things where bats, you know, typically are not a risk. But we know, as with many things in life, there are some things that are health risks, and we just, you know, act accordingly to decrease our risk. And it's just a part of our day to day, especially living in Ontario. Everywhere we go, there is that risk of bats and rabies, and we're just wanting to know what to do. And once we're armed with the information, we can hopefully feel confident in doing it well and being safe.
Dr. Lena Lee, always a pleasure, our medical officer of health. And Andrew Dunn, thank you so much for being here as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Lee will be back with another guest next week here on In Focus. We speak to the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit every week, part of the services we love to provide here at Lake 88. You can learn more, as Andrew said, at healthunit.org, and there is a rabies tab there where you can find out all sorts of great information. And the website itself is filled it's a bounty of information that many things you may not have even known were offered locally. So go and check it out. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.